Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to a special online event today called Healing Modern Epidemics with Plant Medicine, How to Avoid Pop Medicine and Trendy Diagnoses to Find Real Solutions. My name is Stephen Dinan. I'm the founder and CEO of the Shift Network, and I'm thrilled to be here with you with one of the people that I learned the most from, who's opened up a whole new world of understanding of plant medicine, our health, a kind of holistic approach to our energy system, and how we really are embedded in a much larger intelligence, really, of the plant kingdom gives us access to. His name is David Crowe, and he's really become the preeminent, world-renowned pioneer of plant medicine, and approaching that in a very holistic way, drawing from roots in China and India, Ayurveda, and modern herbology to really create a synthesis that can help you transform your relationship with your body, with the ecosphere, and particularly today we're going to focus more on some of the modern epidemics that are so debilitating to so many people. So with that said, we've run many programs with David. People are always blown away by his knowledge, his generosity, and his cornucopia of wisdom from different healing traditions. So thank you so much for joining us here today, David.
Thank you, Stephen. It's always a pleasure.
Well, we're going to have this time together, and we're super excited that David has come forward with a brand new program offering. It's going to be a whole six-month program on plant medicine and modern epidemics, and we'll hear a little bit more about that towards the end of the hour. But more to come on the subjects that we're going to talk about today. So, David, let's talk. I know you've done this a few times, but it's always helpful to have a little bit of backstory. You know, what is it that propelled you into becoming a champion of plant medicine as really the antidote to a lot of the sort of more reductionistic, drug-driven approaches to treating conditions that are more of the tend to be the modern medical approach?
Well, I'll keep it very short. It's a long journey, but it includes some very early encounters with ethnobotanical medicine in Central America. And it went from there to an interest very early in life, actually, when I was 19 and there was no cultural reference for natural medicine at that point at all. There was no natural medicine happening 40 years ago. And I became very interested by having some encounters with some shamans in the mountains of Mexico and realized, wow, there's a whole world of traditional knowledge out there that nobody's talking about. And so I became very interested and I started traveling around and doing self-study and eventually was introduced to the first acupuncture college that opened on the West Coast in California. And I got involved in that, became a student and graduate of that. So was one of the first of the Westerners to graduate from Chinese Medical School, Acupuncture College. And that started me on my clinical practice. But I learned relatively early on that what had come to us from China as traditional Chinese medicine was actually more like traditional communist medicine, very Westernized and simplified and really disconnected from its original cultural and ecological and spiritual roots. So I became very interested in, well, what are those roots? And about the same time, I met the Tibetan Buddhist community in San Francisco and was inspired by a number of the lamas who also knew about Tibetan medicine. I became interested in Tibetan medicine first and went to Nepal and settled in and went back many times and ended up in a traditional internship with a old Tibetan Lama doctor who became one of my primary teachers. And I worked with him for a couple of years, going back and forth, spending 1 year at first studying with him and then visiting him several times, six times actually, before he passed away. And I also met nine other Ayurvedic doctors in the Kathmandu Valley and was very fortunate to be one of the first Westerners really to have a kind of classical internship where the doctors took me in and took me out into the forest and we gathered the plants or went to the markets and did the chopping and grading and cooking and so forth. And all of this became a big story, which I wrote about in my book, In Search of the Medicine Buddha. And I began to gradually bring that medicine into my clinical practice of Chinese medicine, integrate the Tibetan teachings, the Ayurvedic teachings into the classical Chinese teachings. And then from there, I became aware of how endangered these medical traditions are because the plants are becoming endangered. So I started a new phase of work and study, which is a kind of social activism aspect of it, I guess you could say, where I became really interested in the preservation of the plants and started a whole network of community gardens and started a company to support agricultural production of medicinal plants and specifically the aromatic plants that are distilled for the essential oils. So that's a very quick summation of what has happened over several decades. And of course, the last 5 years, that journey has been very directly connected to the SHIFT network and the opportunity to share all of this knowledge. So again, thank you for that.
Well, it's quite a journey, and it's amazing that through you we get access to so many different traditions. So let's share a little bit about your perspective on some of the modern epidemics that plague modern society and how we address them with modern medicine, but how plant medicine can actually be often better or complementary to what people traditionally do.
Right. Well, this is a very complicated topic, actually. One of the things that I have witnessed as a clinician, as a consultant, as an educator, one of the things that has been happening over the last 10 years, especially, and it's really accelerated in the last 5 years, is the prevalence of information that's available on the internet and how this is leading to a whole new kind of self-care. And this, on the one hand, is really positive. We could say that we are in a kind of golden age, actually, of natural medicine, because we have, with the click of the mouse, we have access to herbs from all over the world. And those herbs represent the traditions that they come from. So we can get Chinese herbs, Ayurvedic herbs, Western herbs, European herbs, African herbs, South American herbs. We can get them very easily. Now, the problem is that a lot of that information is all mixed up with marketing, okay? And it's very complicated. And there are a lot of claims that are made about what these herbs do. And these claims and the marketing of the products are really taken out of context of the traditional lineages. Now, all of this is happening for a reason, and that is that even though we are in this golden age of natural medicine, in a certain way, it's also a golden age of allopathic medicine. You know, a lot of innovative treatments are coming out that are replacing a lot of things in modern conventional allopathic medicine that we could say even just a few years ago were prevalent and quite barbaric, actually. So a lot of innovation is happening in allopathic medicine and a lot of rapid development in access to natural medicine. That's the golden age side of it. But the problem is that we're still in a huge healthcare crisis that is happening, especially in the United States. And the reason for that is because all of these wonderful forms of medicine are available, but they are only available for a certain socioeconomic group of people. You see, because natural medicine is not paid for by healthcare policies. And even if you have a healthcare policy, you might still be facing bankruptcy if you have a serious illness and all that's available to you is allopathic medicine. And allopathic medicine is wonderful, but it doesn't do two fundamental things. It cannot nourish the body, which means it has nothing to rejuvenate our vitality, and it doesn't have anything to detoxify us. And if a medical system can't do those two things, then it has some fundamental flaws. And that's where natural medicine and specifically plant-based medicine comes in, which is that the plants give us concentrated nutrients that boost our immune system and our vitality, and they help the body's natural detox mechanisms to be functioning. So that's really the basis of what's happening, is that we have the best and the worst all together. And because there are so many people that need natural medicine, but can't get access to high quality care because they have to pay for it out of pocket, or there are not practitioners in their region, and those practitioners are extremely busy a lot of times. So what has happened is that people are turning to the internet for answers. And on the one hand, there's a lot of information that is very, very good, and we can become more educated as consumers. We can become highly educated patients. We can learn a lot about how to take care of ourselves, but at the same time, it's mixed up with a huge amount of conflicting information, marketing claims, and in some cases, a lot of fraudulent, dangerous claims also. So what I have seen is that even just in the last 5 years, that there has been a tremendous increase, raising of awareness among people about herbal medicine. And more people are using herbal medicine, but it's still very generalized. Now, if you can afford to see a practitioner who can give you an individualized prescription based on your age and your condition and your digestive system and the medications you might be on and so forth, that's great, because then you can solve these problems. But people are trying to solve these problems themselves. Now, in a certain way, that's what we're going to have to do, because we're not all going to be able to afford to see a high-quality, highly trained, highly qualified practitioner of natural medicine. So what we need to do then is continue raising the level of education that we have, and that's why I am proposing that we learn how to think like clinicians. And this is very important, because if we think like clinicians, we can get away from a lot of these problems. So one of the basic things that we have to ask, well, okay, great, well, how do clinicians think? And what is it that we have to learn next, all right? What we have learned now is that there are all these herbs that are great for all these kinds of different conditions, and we can start to use those. But that's not enough, because herbs are more complicated and people's health conditions are more complicated. And so what's happening then is that people are not getting the best results. They're having some adverse reactions. They don't know about herb-drug interactions. So what we need to do is keep raising that level of knowledge for a general audience, for the general public, so that we are empowered medically to know how to use natural medicine correctly. And what that means is basically going back to the roots of these traditions. And so thinking like a clinician, in my mind, means a certain level of discriminating awareness, asking fundamental questions, questioning information that's there, and also knowing some principles about how the body works. So what we're really talking about is just some basic questions that people should ask, okay? And I can just go through these very quickly. And one of the most basic questions to ask if you are researching for yourself and you're coming across all this information: turmeric is good for inflammation, CBD is good for pain, all these kind of things. The first question that a clinician would ask is, well, what is the quality of the product, okay? Where does it come from? And more importantly, is that really what you need? And how is your body going to digest it? And what kinds of contradictions are there maybe in using that particular herb? And is this really just treating the symptom, or is it really going to address the cause? So what we try to do is, as we think like clinicians, we're really trying to understand priorities. We're trying to develop a treatment plan, a clear strategy, but it needs to be as individualized as possible. And what that means is that there can be a product that you come across and it sounds really good, and there's all these testimonials and all the science backing it up, and it sounds like the perfect thing, but you can't digest it. It is just hard on your stomach. So we need to take into consideration these personalized questions. And so some level of self-diagnosis is necessary. And the more that we understand about our own body, the better and more effectively self-care will become. So we need to also understand how to experiment with natural medicine, because really all medicine is an experiment. I mean, even if you take a course of antibiotics, it's the outcome is unknown until it's over. And that might even be months later that the outcome is not known. Or if you start a prescription of anti-anxiety or antidepressant medication, it's an experiment. And the benefit of using herbs is that the experiments tend to produce minimal adverse reactions for the most part. And those adverse reactions are fairly commonly known, and how to avoid them is fairly easy. But one of the other topics that's very important is that a lot of people who need natural medicine the most, they're already on at least one or numerous medications. And so combining herbs and medication, prescription drugs, is something that requires some evaluation and it requires some education. And again, this is something that a lot of people are doing now. A lot of people are really trying to figure this out because they're on medications, they're looking for answers, they want to reduce the medications, they want to use natural alternatives. The doctors don't know about the natural alternatives, so who's going to do it? We're going to have to do it. And that's the whole hypothesis of this discussion, is that we have to take care of ourselves at a higher level, which means that we have to know more. So we have to understand some of the strengths and weaknesses of allopathic diagnosis and allopathic treatment. And we also have to understand the strengths and weaknesses of traditional diagnosis and traditional treatment. So I'll give you a couple examples here. What's a strength of allopathic medicine? Well, a objective testing method, okay? This is the strength of allopathic medicine. You go, you have an X-ray, you have an MRI. Well, there it is. You can see things. You can't do that listening to the pulse, okay, or looking at the face and the tongue in classical medicine, traditional Asian medicine. You can't see those kinds of things. So allopathic medicine needs to be used in the right place. But then, what's the weakness of allopathic medicine? Well, the weakness is that it doesn't have the ability to nourish the immune system and our organs and our vitality through concentrated nutrition, and it doesn't have the ability to detoxify us either, you see. That's the fundamental weakness. So allopathic medicine is very strong in objective diagnosis, but it's somewhat weak when it comes to, it's totally weak, actually, when it comes to those two basic functions. But classical Asian medicine isn't perfect either, you see. And what happens is that people become confused about it should be this or it should be that. But what we have to do next in this educational process is learn how to put them together. So the great strength of classical Asian medicine is that it is organoleptic, meaning that it is based on seeing who you are. And that means your body type. And there's a lot of awareness now about the Ayurvedic system of the body types. And based on that, people are learning how to adjust their lifestyle and how to use diet properly and some basic herbs and so forth. And that's excellent. But the great weakness of classical Asian medicine is that the diagnostic methods are subjective, you see. And so listening to the pulse, a number of different practitioners will interpret it very differently, you see. So that's how we have to start thinking critically about what is the strength of modern medicine, what is the strength of traditional medicine, and what are their weaknesses and how do we start to combine them. So my suggestion with all of this is just learn how to integrate these as effectively as possible. And as we do this, we're going to start to learn some other critical thinking skills, like recognizing the contradictions that happen. And a lot of people don't know about this because this is really part of clinical training. And that is that an herb can be good for one thing, but not good for another thing. All right. It's the same thing with pharmaceutical drugs. They can help a symptom, but they can be terrible for your liver. Well, herbs also have some contradictions that way, where they can be very good for what the symptoms are that you have, but it might be really hard on your stomach. That's a very common type of contradiction, okay? So turmeric, for example, or the bitter herbs to stimulate the flow of bile. These types of things can be very, very therapeutic, but depending on your age and your health history, they have to be modified so that you get the best results. So another real good example, very trendy right now, is all the CBD and the cannabis products, okay? These can be very good for symptomatic relief, but they can also be hard on the body in different ways. So these are just a few of the first thoughts that I have here, Stephen, to sort of set the context here of why this discussion is important and how we can approach raising people's consciousness and the level of education further so that we can really become more educated so that our self-care reaches a new level, so that we're actually moving towards a clinical level of understanding, which I would like to basically call clinical level self-care, that we can become our own clinicians the more we understand the principles at a deeper level.
So it sounds like one of the, you know, you were talking about the complementary strengths and everything, and that the modern allopathic medicine doesn't really nourish the body or kind of in a way work upstream. So we want to share a little bit more about the strengths of the plant medicine world and how you can both nourish the body and also detoxify, and why that's actually essential to really get real solutions on a lot of these more chronic conditions.
Right. Well, this is a simplistic way of describing how herbal medicine works in the body. And there's a lot of different ways to look at this, a lot of different lenses that we can look at herbal medicine through. One example, one description of plant medicine is that we are using compounds that the plants produce for themselves for parallel functions in the human body. So in order to answer your question, we have to understand how plant medicine works in the human body. And that's where some of the broader ecological and spiritual dimensions of plant medicine come into focus. So the human body is designed to be in an intimate biological relationship with nature. We are designed to extract sunlight from the food chain. That's why our digestive system is made the way it is. And in order to extract the sunlight that the plants have extracted through photosynthesis, our physiology works in an opposite pattern of photosynthesis to combust and to release the solar energy that's stored in the food that the plants put there. And as we are combusting the sunlight that's stored in the food chain, we are also breathing in an opposite gaseous exchange with the plants. And the reasons for this biologically are very simple, which is that we are dependent on the plants for everything. We're dependent on the plants for food and nourishment, and that's the nutrients from the dirt, which we can't eat directly, and the solar energy, which we can't consume directly either. So that's our place in nature, and understanding that then helps us understand all these other functions that the plant medicines give us, because when we look at various classes of compounds inside the plant medicines, what we see is that the plants produce them for their own purposes. But we are using them for parallel purposes with our own health. And the reason that we can use them for parallel purposes is because the body is a mirror image of the plants. And that's because of how we are designed biologically to extract energy from our environment. We can't do it directly, even though it would be a huge evolutionary leap if we could all just learn how to photosynthesize directly or just live directly from the soil, but we can't. And that parallel between the human body and the plants also gives us a clue as to how plant medicines help us. Now, plant medicines do these two basic functions. They provide concentrated nutrients, which build us up, and they help to support the body's natural detoxification processes. And these two processes are basically all that the body does. All of our physiological functions are summed up as being nothing more than extracting energy from the environment and eliminating the byproducts. That's it. That's what the human organism is doing all the time. That's what every organism is doing, basically. And all disease and all disturbance, all health problems can be described as coming from a disturbance in those two flows, those two basic processes. So if the intake of nutrition and energy is deficient or blocked somehow, then we have a weakness. That's a fundamental root. And that weakness allows illness to come in. And that's described as basically being an immunological weakness that allows things to come into the body that the body can't fight off. The opposite is that we're not eliminating properly. And that means that there's an excess, and that's some type of toxin that the body should be getting rid of. Maybe it's a natural toxin that builds up from the end result of digestive processes, or maybe it's an excess toxin from the environment. But we need to always be cleansing, and the body is always doing these two things. And when we use plant medicine, or even just good nutrition, just high quality plant-based diet, that happens as well. The plants support us. And we can ask the question here, well, why do they do that? Why and how are they actually providing nutrition for us and helping us detoxify? That's where we can move to the ecological level. And what we see is that that's what the plants do. That's what they're doing all the time in the environment around us. So plants biologically are continually detoxifying the environment. They're purifying the water, they're rejuvenating the soil, they're cleansing, and they are rejuvenating the elements of the environment all the time. And that's why we need them ecologically, environmentally, for human survival in the biosphere. So when we consume plants, whether it's in food or whether we're using them with more narrow purposes of medicines, all we are doing is using their biological, physiological powers that they're doing all the time in nature all around us. So that's the link.
Well, thank you, David, for that very comprehensive answer. So one of the things we said we'd talk about next has to do with avoiding trendy diagnoses. There's just a lot of hype and hoopla around, you know, quick fix kind of solutions out there. And so I know you're an advocate for going to kind of more root causes and long-term systemic things. So how do you avoid the hype and find the really deeper upstream causes?
Well, again, we have to think like clinicians. And in this particular case, it's a combination of more knowledge and a more in-depth questioning process. Question everything. Be skeptical of everything. But I'll mention that trendy diagnoses are not happening just now in the last few years. That's been going on forever. And it's not just a natural medicine. Like, for example, allopathic medicine has had its own trendy diagnoses. I mean, it used to be that hormone replacement therapy was just given to every woman as soon as she reached 50 years old. And antidepressants are widely overprescribed because it's all in your head. And we're just handing out, you know, medications for hyperactivity and ADHD to kids like they're candy. So allopathic medicine has this problem as well. But the question specifically when it comes to the naturopathic, the holistic field of medicine, there are a lot of things that I hear that are very redundant, that we could say are trendy, but I also would use a stronger term, which is basically their wastebasket diagnoses. It's something that sort of everybody has now. And I question the validity of this, and I'll just give you a list here, and then I'll explain why I question this. And it's not that these aren't real problems either. It's just that we have to put them in perspective. And that's part of learning to think like a clinician, is to understand, are these problems a primary cause, or are they part of something else, or are they totally irrelevant? So a lot of people, when I do consultations, I have become accustomed now to hearing the same diagnoses over and over again, because people have a lot of these conditions, and yet these are not really the problems either. So these trendy diagnoses include heavy metals, parasites, leaky gut, candida, SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, the MTHFR gene mutation, which is methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase. This is also very trendy now. And calcification of the pineal, and a great emphasis on need to detoxify. Everybody needs to detoxify. Now, some of these are actual medical conditions, but we need to think clinically, critically, to sort out whether it's really a problem or it's just a symptom, or maybe it's not even relevant. So we have to ask, is it a real problem? Is it the major problem? Is it a contributing factor? Will treating it make a difference? What's the order of the treatment? And most importantly, is the treatment going to help it or is it going to make things worse? And in some cases, the treatments are actually worse than the condition. So if we go through very quickly, look at these, like heavy metals, for example. This is almost a wastebasket diagnosis now, okay? Everybody has heavy metals. There's no question about it. But what we have to do, thinking like clinicians, is that we have to put it on a spectrum of seriousness. So if you have been involved in some industrial situation where you were significantly poisoned by a specific metal and you have clinical symptoms of that type of metal poisoning, or if you were around a nuclear accident and you have radiation poisoning symptoms, okay, you are at the end of the spectrum where a diagnosis of heavy metal poisoning is accurate and the treatment should be focused on chelating and getting those toxins out of the body. But otherwise, most people are over at the other side of the spectrum where we all have heavy metals and most likely the body is coping with them. Now, it can be that if you have a dental history and you've had a lot of mercury, that your levels are going to be much higher. Now, the question is, what do we do with that information? And unfortunately, chelating metals out of the body is not a simple process. It's actually somewhat dangerous. So we can't really do much with that information except to understand that certain plants, certain herbal approaches can be supportive in helping the body to naturally detoxify over time. But the danger with this type of diagnosis is that it can become a distraction from treating the underlying condition and the whole person. It can become a focus that isn't necessarily going to lead to anything that's productive or fruitful in terms of improving health. It is something to be considered in the big picture. And the same with parasites. We need to understand that there's real parasitology. And if you can find and identify, and this is one of the strengths of allopathic medicine, if you can find the microbe, you know exactly what you have, then you will have to make a decision about how to treat it. And herbal medicine, unfortunately, is not that effective for treating more serious parasitic conditions. It is very effective for restoring the terrain of the digestive system. And that can remove a lot of the symptoms and in some cases actually support the body in self-clearing the parasites. But a lot of people report, well, I took this remedy for a couple of weeks and the parasites are gone. Most likely you didn't even have parasites because in order to get rid of them, you need to take herbs that are so strong that they run the same risk as the allopathic medications. And so if you have a real serious parasitic disease, if you have amoebiasis, for example, okay, that's totally different and needs to be treated really carefully with combined medicines. But a lot of people actually have a disturbance of the terrain of the digestive tract and they have overgrowth of bacteria, SIBO, okay, or they have candida. And the problem with these kind of diagnoses is that the treatment principle is frequently exactly the same as what caused the problem in the first place. Natural medicine thinks allopathically when these diagnoses are given. You have small intestine bacterial overgrowth, we need to attack the bacteria. You have candida, we need to attack the candida. But the problem is that these things grow opportunistically as a result of the digestive immunity being damaged by something which is almost always antibiotics at some point previously. You see, so natural medicine also has to be criticized here, and the limitations need to be understood. That just because we have a new kind of diagnosis, and some practitioner told you you have SIBO, that does not mean that you should start ingesting strong attacking herbs against those bacteria, because most likely that is going to inflame the digestive system further, weaken the digestive immunity further, and cause further problems, because it's a symptom of something else. It's not the main problem. So there's a number of these types of things. And what we have to do is basically understand these diagnoses and put them into their proper context, and then come up with real solutions to it. So how do we do that? Well, I have three criteria for real solutions. One is, has this treatment been done for an extended period of time? And here's the beauty of plant medicine. If there was a plant that was used for laxative purposes 1,000 years ago, it's going to have laxative purposes today, and it'll have laxative purposes 1,000 years from now. So we know this plant does this, and we can rely on that long history of understanding what the plants do. That's solid information. That's not trendy, okay? That's been around for a very long time. That is actually one of humanity's greatest legacies, is our accumulated knowledge of what plants do. And then the second is that we have a lot of modern research that confirms a lot of these traditional empirical evidence knowledge base. And we can understand it in even more depth. And then we actually just have the empirical evidence in modern times of this does this. So what we need to do is we need to combine all of these, the traditional knowledge, the modern research, and then what is actually being found now in evidence-based medicine. Now, here's one of the things that we need to watch for, and I'll just go ahead and move into one of these other points that I wanted to talk about, false marketing claims, because this is really connected to this entire topic. And there are a lot of false marketing claims, and a lot of these claims are actually somewhat deceptive because they're linked to research studies that show that something happens, but it's not relevant because it's not happening in the body. It's happening in a petri dish. So one of the things that we need to watch out for when we're looking at these sources of substantial evidence is that in a lot of the marketing claims, that modern research is cited. And that's fine if you can think like a clinician and you can sort of take this apart and question, what are the claims that are being made and where did this evidence come from? So let's say, one example I'm really familiar with, and that is that the claims that essential oils will do all kinds of different things. They'll cure everything. They attack all kinds of microbes. And a big scandal actually happened a few years ago where the FDA came down on some of these bigger MLM companies because they were making all these outrageous claims. And it went back to making claims that essential oils could cure Ebola. Well, how can you say that? Well, the evidence shows that if you have a standardized strain of a particular microbe, that if you put an essential oil into that petri dish with that microbe, that it'll kill it. Okay, well, that's great. And this is also relevant for the whole discussion about frankincense oil curing cancer. This is a big, big question that keeps coming over and over again. People are always asking, does frankincense oil cure cancer? And the answer is no. And there may be some isolated cases where some people have used it in conjunction with other things for maybe a skin cancer. But I don't think that there is any case that is fully documented where a person used only frankincense oil against a specific cancer and that's what cured them. Now, one of the ways that we will know when this is done, when it has happened, when frankincense essential oil has been proven to have anti-cancer properties, or some of its compounds have been proven to have anti-cancer properties in the body, not in a petri dish, is that Wall Street is going to go crazy. There's going to be some stocks that are going to make some people very rich because those compounds are going to be patented into a new pharmaceutical drug. So in the meantime, as self-care clinicians, what we think is, we think, what was that species of frankincense oil? What dose was given? How was it administered? What was the type of cancer? What other types of treatments were being given? And so forth. And what we see is that you can't really make this claim without having that kind of substantiation, you see. So when it comes to the antimicrobial powers of essential oils and the anti-tumor properties, anti-cancer properties of essential oils, what's happening is a lot of claims are being made based on what happens in a petri dish, but you can't duplicate that in the human body. So we see all kinds of evidence showing that oregano oil, for example, will kill all this bacteria in your digestive. It will kill these different strains of bacteria in a petri dish. And then people say, well, you have SIBO, therefore you should take oregano oil. This is a very common thing that happens in natural clinics, okay? You should take oregano oil. Hopefully it's diluted, because if you take it undiluted, it's going to burn you badly. But even in a diluted form in a capsule, it's going to have a strong overheating effect on your digestive system. And again, you're thinking allopathically. You're attacking the microbes without thinking about regulating the biorhythm of the peristalsis or reducing the inflammation, and that oregano oil is going to increase the inflammation, and you will just end up making the condition worse. So this is one of the main things we have to think about when we start thinking like clinicians, is question everything. And where did this information come from? And is it actually translatable from a petri dish to the human body? I'll just mention one other thing here in this area. Very, very big trend right now is the CBD products. And the CBD products are unfortunately very problematic, okay? And a lot of claims are being made. So CBD and the cannabis products together, I mean the THC products as well. Now, what you have with cannabis is the stronger the medicine, the more the benefits, but the greater the potential side effects and the more knowledge you need. The stronger it becomes, the more you need to understand what it actually is. Now, CBD compared to the THC products is relatively benign, okay? But when you are thinking like a clinician, you are also going to look at the backstory of what's happening politically in the industry. And the more you know about what's happening in the industry, the more you're going to understand why these things are problematic. So I'll just share a little bit of information with you about some of the politics going on behind this. The FDA is really involved in CBD, and it's going to become increasingly problematic. The main reason originally that they were involved is because people are making so many claims about it. And you can't. You just cannot go against the FDA rule about claiming that a plant will cure something. You can't do that. It's against the law. And so right away, when these companies come out and they say, it will cure your anxiety, it will cure your depression, it will cure your pain and inflammation, right away, you know that that company is not in compliance with the basic rules of the game, as it were, all right? So it might do that, but if a company is doing that, then you should immediately question the integrity of that company. So when it comes to these types of claims, what I find really interesting, when you study what's happening politically with CBD, the FDA is testing numerous products from numerous companies, and guess what? Some of these products don't even have any CBD in them, okay? And a lot of them, the majority of them, actually have far less CBD than the claims that they are making. So there's something fraudulent going on that's pretty widespread in this industry that just has to do not even with the claims. It's just that the products don't even have the ingredient. So this is something that we learn the more we study the backstory, the inside story of what's happening here. And it's true. CBD does work, and it does work for a wide variety of these kind of conditions, and it can work really well for people. But the problem is that true CBD at the therapeutic levels that you need are going to present two problems. One is it's actually really expensive to get the pure concentrated CBD. And second, it will create problems in your digestive tract. And I'll just share that with you from my clinical experience, empirical evidence. It's hard to digest and it's heating. And the FDA is now coming out and agreeing with what I am saying. And they are saying CBD has the potential to cause liver damage. All right, so we need to stay abreast of all of these stories to really understand what's happening holistically and then be able to put these marketing claims into true perspective. So, Stephen, I hope that's a helpful quick overview.
Yeah, it's really clear. I mean, it's so eye-opening talking to you. I mean, I had no idea about the Wild West of CBD and some of the overhype. And so it's really clear there's a lot of snake oil out there and there's a lot that has to be avoided. So let's turn our attention more now on what we should be including in a plant medicine pharmacy, or talk about specific herbs that you do feel like we can ground ourselves in and that are reliable and that are really essential for us to be treating our family and avoiding some of these modern epidemics.
Right, and this is where it's actually very easy. You know, all this discussion that we've been having is really about the complexities, and especially the complexities when it comes to more serious health conditions. But that should not discourage us at all from using herbal medicine. And herbal medicine should be in our home. And the more we bring herbs into the home and we have our own home pharmacy, the more we will start to cultivate a relationship with these healing plants and we will understand their benefits. Now, keep in mind that there is a huge range of medicinal plants that we can use very, very safely and effectively, and we don't have to be clinicians and we don't have to be trained herbalists. It's just folk medicine. And the beauty of folk medicine is that there are so many herbs that are available to us that are really food grade level herbs. And the more we use these food grade level herbs, the more we get their benefits. And actually, naturopathic clinicians frequently are using these simple food grade herbs. There's nothing exotic about them at all. I'll just mention a few simple things like chamomile tea. Well, guess what? Chamomile tea is like the first choice for even high level herbalists, or peppermint tea for irritable bowel conditions. You see, it's so simple, and these herbs are really, really helpful. So we do not have to have a high level of herbal training when it comes to understanding medicinal plants that are extremely helpful and extremely safe. So my suggestion for putting together a home pharmacy is to think in terms of different groups of herbs. And the first group could be herbs that everyone can use safely, that are very easy to use, and they're highly effective. And so we think of things like chamomile tea and mint tea. And then we also include the spices. And the spices are basically two primary categories. There are the herbaceous spices, and those would be things like thyme and oregano and rosemary and sage and things like that. And then we have the more classical tropical spices like cinnamon and cardamom, things like that. Now, this simple pharmacy of just having some of these aromatic teas, tulsi tea, chamomile, mint, things like that, and these spices, these should never be underestimated in terms of how much benefit they can have. These can actually cure a lot of things. They can help with colds and flus, respiratory conditions, all manner of digestive conditions. Really, for people with SIBO, what I always recommend for people who have candida, digestive problems, history of antibiotics, always start with these aromatics. They are amazingly helpful. Fennel seeds, cardamom seeds. It sounds ridiculous, but they're so effective, actually. And the research that's coming out is very encouraging. And not only are they helpful for the simple, everyday, common things, but some of these plants now are getting recognition as having extraordinary powers for even more complicated things. Like rosemary has always been considered an herb to strengthen the brain for concentration and memory. And now rosemary is getting a tremendous amount of attention for its neuroprotective effect. It's neuroregenerative effects for counteracting neurodegenerative conditions, loss of memory, dementia, things like that. So even the simple herbs can go all the way into high-level clinical treatment. And they're also things that we can use on an ongoing basis. And here's one of the most important aspects of this level of the home pharmacy is that these are things that if we use them on an ongoing basis and we become familiar with them, we actually develop a physical relationship with the plant where we recognize that, oh, I would really like to have a cup of lemon balm tea now in the evening to relax. In other words, you will know when it's time to take something, okay? And this is a very important aspect of self-healing. We're talking about developing all of these critical thinking skills as a clinician, but there's a spiritual dimension to all of this, which is actually becoming more aware of the body sensations that the plants produce as part of our self-care. And the more sensitive we are at that level, the more we will intuitively recognize I need to chew some fennel seeds or some cardamom seeds, or I need to make some ginger tea right now. It's just a simple thing. You get indigestion after a meal. Obviously, you're going to remember, oh, okay, ginger tea will take care of it. And it's amazing. It will. So there's a level of self-awareness that's also involved along with the level of understanding what the plants do. But it's not an extensive education. It's real simple things that we can take virtually on a daily basis. This is a very strong reason to use these herbs, because when it comes to more complicated conditions, more complicated treatments of complex conditions, we frequently have to know more about the dosage and the length of time to take something. So, for example, in autoimmune conditions or people who are going through chemotherapy treatments, there's always a room for some of the stronger herbs, the lymphatic cleansing herbs, okay? But these have to be regulated by exact dosages, one or two drops of the tincture. And they also need to be regulated according to the period of length of time that they're used. Take them for a week on, take them for a week off. So what we have to understand also as we raise our level of knowledge about this is that there are classes of herbs that everyone can use all the time very safely, and there are classes of herbs that are somewhat in between, and then there are classes of herbs that are much higher level that we really do need to know about carefully and use carefully, okay? The second group of herbs after this first aromatic category, as it were, spices and simple teas, chamomile, lemon balm for relaxing, things like that, you know, mint, some fennel and cardamom for the digestive system, those simple examples, is that we can go to some things that will improve the quality of life overall, but they're also therapeutic. So we don't have to think just in terms of the herbs do this for these symptoms. We can also think in terms of just improving the environment that we're in. And this is a very good place for the aromatics as essential oils and diffusers. Essential oils and diffusers have a very important long-term immune-enhancing and antimicrobial effect in the environment and in the respiratory system. And it can also be something that you can integrate into your meditation practice with some of the pure botanical aromatics, a little drop of frankincense on a coal, a little piece of agarwood on a coal, just to support your relaxation of mind, to create a nice sacred space. This is another way that we can bring botanical medicines into a home pharmacy. We don't have to think just in terms of drinking something. Then what you can add next are going to be the things that are used more when you have something, okay? Colds and flus, that's when you're going to want to have your echinacea golden seal tincture, or have some chaga tincture or some chaga mushroom to cook in a soup. For sleep, you might like to have the linden tincture, and I'll give you one of my current favorites. Half and half tincture of linden flowers and lemon balm together, one dropper each in a little bit of water before bed. Very nice for sleep and relaxation. Just calms the mind. It settles the heart. It's used clinically also for hyperthyroid kinds of conditions, for settling the heat in the glandular system and in the nervous system. But there's a whole range of things just to have a sleep pharmacy, for example, or to have a specific digestive pharmacy. Then the next level that you can go to is things that are specific for your individual condition. And so you may think about, well, you have depression, anxiety, your mind is not in a good place at various times. And what can you do about it? You can create a pharmacy that will help lift you up, that will improve cerebral circulation, that will calm adrenal overstimulation. The more you know about your individual condition, the more you can put this level of the pharmacy together very successfully. And then there is the last group of herbs that I would mention, and that is things that really work well all the time, and especially if you have those conditions. And this is actually moving directly into the next point. And these are little known herbs, actually. Most of them are known by clinicians primarily, but these are things that you should also know about. And these are highly effective for very specific conditions. And this is a nice list that I'll give you here, because it's always nice to know this herb always does this. Okay. Now, in general, herbs are much more predictable and they will produce their effects in a more predictable, repetitive kind of way. So what I mean by that is, like, if you take a laxative, it's going to always work, okay? Almost always for almost all people, there will be a laxative effect. If you take a diuretic, the same. If you take something that's really heating to your stomach, the same. Now, the reason that I mention this about herbs is because we contrast that with essential oils and aromatherapy. And this is a point that is very confused with fraudulent marketing claims also. Aromatherapy works through the olfactory system on the limbic system of the brain. And because of that, it is much more individualized. When we take herbs, they go into the digestive tract through the liver and so forth. Herbs will almost always do what they are reputed to do. And many types of herbs are definitely that way. Some types of herbs, not so much, but herbs tend to be more predictable in their effects. When it comes to the effects through the olfactory sense, however, it's much more subjective, and that's because our limbic system is in charge of liking and disliking and our emotional memories and a whole range of things that can influence the effects. So, for example, people will hear lavender is relaxing. Well, okay, lavender is relaxing in general, but for a significant number of people, it's not that relaxing. There are things that are more relaxing. And for a significant number of people, it's not relaxing at all. And for a certain percentage of people, it can actually be stimulating. That's the effect of the olfactory system, you see. Now, other essential oils, like if you put in the eucalyptus oil in a steam and inhale it, that's not a subjective experience at all. Those essential oils are going to come directly in contact with the respiratory mucous membranes. It will always have a decongestant effect in your sinuses and an expectorant mucolytic effect in your lungs, always. So it has to do with the route of administration. And this is another example of how we learn to think as clinicians, to understand the herb is in this form. It's going into this channel in the body. Therefore, we can expect this effect or not, you see. So allopathic medicine has given us this kind of thinking, which is like, this drug will do this. Okay, well, that kind of allopathic thinking is in herbal medicine also very commonly. And this is one of the things that we would like to retain to some degree, but we would also like to think more holistically. And so as we learn to think more like clinicians, we also learn to think on an individual level. And we learn to understand the complexities of the herbs, that herbs have a whole range of effects that they can have. And then when you take this whole range of effects and you put it into an individual, that a lot of different things can happen. Just the same as with pharmaceutical drugs, a lot of different things can happen. Now, we see that allopathic thinking through internet medicine. A few examples here: hot flashes, black cohosh. Okay. Well, sometimes that works. A lot of times it doesn't. That's allopathic thinking. Now, if you combine the black cohosh with other things that make it more individualized, you're going to get better results. That's clinical thinking. Depression, take St. John's wort. All right. That's allopathic thinking as well. Now, as a clinician, the first thing you're going to think about is, well, okay, St. John's wort is really good for detoxifying your liver. Therefore, it's going to get rid of those SSRIs out of your bloodstream more quickly. And that means you have a drug-herb interaction that you have to take into consideration. So we have to think in terms of individualized applications of the herbs other than this kind of generic application. So let me just give you a list here. These are a few of my favorite herbs and essential oils that I have found almost always do what they're supposed to do. And that's nice to know about. Hot flashes, clary sage essential oil. I have heard so many testimonials about this. Even just in a diffuser, it can cool the hot flash, okay? But if it's really strong, if it happens really frequently, you maybe should put it in a bath. Two or three drops in a bath, mix it up really well, maybe put it with an emulsifier like milk, mix it up really well, or put it in a body oil, massage oil. Here's one that clinicians know about. Blue vervain is a specific remedy for stress and anxiety. That's something that a lot of people don't know. Wood betony for head pain of various types. Very predictable, repeatable kinds of effects. So the demulcent herbs like licorice and slippery elm and marshmallow will always produce a demulcent soothing effect in the digestive tract. The Jatamansi essential oil, also known as spikenard, if you put a drop on the bottom of your feet before bed, it will always give you psychedelic dreams and good sleep. Maybe a little too stimulating for some people. Corn silk tea or tincture always produces a very beautiful, mild, soothing diuretic effect for cleansing the bladder. Hawthorn is almost always good for everybody for strengthening the heart muscle. But as a clinician, you will know that hawthorn is to be used cautiously when there are heart medications involved. Milky oat seed tincture, always good for nourishing the adrenal glands for everybody. So I have a long list of these types of things. But those are a few examples. I know we're running out of time here. So.
Well, David, it is truly stunning to go deep with you. I mean, you know so much about so many. I mean, there's a whole pharmacopoeia of knowledge for the body and all the herbs and how the interactions. And clearly, this is not a terrain that you want to go into without your eyes wide open and a lot of knowledge. So we're really excited that you are offering this brand new program. And let's talk a little bit about it now. It's called Plant Medicine and for Modern Epidemics. And it's going to be a 6-month training that really goes deep into this. This is a training that is suitable for advanced beginners, if you will, and for full clinicians. It really is something that you can use to develop your own home pharmacy, work with your family, even extend that knowledge into your practice. It's about being able to work upstream from all the chronic health conditions and be able to have a more comprehensive approach to both strengthen the body, to detoxify, to rebalance, all of the different qualities that David has talked so beautifully about today. So you can find the program outlined in detail at plantmedicine4modernepidemics.com. It's kind of a long URL, but plantmedicine4modernepidemics.com. And as I said, it's going to be a 6-month training. It's one of the most comprehensive trainings that David has yet offered. And we have gotten just stellar feedback from everybody who's done previous trainings with him. We've had many, many thousands of graduates of his programs. He's really helped us raise the bar globally on how to use plant medicine in a sophisticated way that gets results, that harmonizes with your body, that really creates enhanced health. So, David, I'd love for you to share in your own words what you're excited to bring forward in this 6-month journey with folks. And then we can get a tour of some of the highlights of the modules.
Well, what I'm excited about is that this is actually a very condensed course with a lot of information. And we are looking at the information through a particular lens. And that lens is, how do we become more educated to have a higher level of self-care. So the course is about the modern epidemics. And well, what are modern epidemics? Modern epidemics are these conditions that are very widespread that actually need plant medicine. Okay, these are conditions that people are looking for help with. These are some of the primary conditions that people are not getting satisfaction with allopathic medicine, or they're getting limited results with allopathic medicine. I know for a lot of people who have these conditions that they are walking away from allopathic medicines. A lot of these conditions have actually been caused by, or allopathic medicine has contributed to them developing. So these are the conditions that people are suffering from that really need a comprehensive herbal program for. So that's the quick introduction to it. And the way that I'm laying this out is in 12 primary modules, each one devoted to one of these epidemics. And each module in turn is going to look at a number of issues sequentially that will include a pharmacy and what to do. But it's also going to touch on many of these points that we discussed here, because those points, everything we talked about in this last hour, all those things are completely relevant for people who have these conditions as well. They're looking for answers and they're coming across trendy diagnoses. People who have these conditions that are at epidemic levels, if they go to naturopathic doctors, they are being told that they have SIBO, and they're being told that they have heavy metals, and they're being told that they have these other conditions. And that's not enough of an answer, okay? It's part of the picture, but it's not enough of an answer. So that's the quick overview. And of course, as always, I mean, to answer your question directly, what am I excited about? I'm just looking forward to people feeling better. That's the great satisfaction that I get from it. And in all the courses where, and you know, we always have interaction and feedback, discussion and so forth, especially in this course, there's going to be a lot more of that. And it's very gratifying personally just to see that herbal medicine works so well, and that an organized approach to using herbal medicine is actually much more effective than an internet medicine-based approach. Even though we're doing this through the internet, it's actually a very organized clinical approach. That's the other thing that's unique about this. There are a lot of courses that are out there about herbal medicine, but what I am attempting to do here is to really take people's self-knowledge and self-care to a new level by introducing these complexities of how you think like a clinician and giving the basic guidelines how you do that. So it's not like, okay, you have this condition, take these herbs. You have this condition, but now how do you modify these herbs for your individual digestive system and your age and the medications you might be on and so forth? What are the thinking processes, the thought processes that have to go into actually applying these herbs? You may know these herbs, but they may not work for you. You may not know other herbs. So how do we actually put together a comprehensive program so it's much less of, okay, go do this, and it's much more, let's solve the problem together so that you can find your way individually. And that always gives best results. So that's the short answer to that.
Fantastic. Well, it's really clear from going through the modules, and I'm sure people have to take some time after this call to go through the whole page at plantmedicineformodernepidemics.com. You really see just how much wisdom there is in every module and how comprehensive approach it is and how many different facets of disease and systems that you're addressing here. And for me personally, one of the things that I also just so appreciate about your work is that there's a spiritual depth and component too. It's not just like an allopathic approach to herbs, but you're really dealing things, the whole person, which includes meditative components and higher consciousness, and you weave that in there as well. So it's a very holistic approach. So I'll share a few other things. So every month includes two teaching sessions and one small group coaching session centered on a specific health topic. And you get a total of 19, 120-minute live sessions. David has a lot of content, so he's extended this more than we typically do. So there's 19, 120-minute sessions. That includes Q&A time. You get recordings of the video and audio. You get word-for-word transcripts to study and highlight. You get weekly things you can study at home. You have a Facebook community as well. There's just a lot of dynamism, and there's a whole series of extra bonuses as well you can find at plantmedicineformodernepidemics.com. This includes an audio dialogue with David called Simple and Effective Combinations of Herbs and Essential Oils. There's another one with David on Wisdom in the Senses, an Ayurvedic Approach to Well-Being. There's one with Tripti Gokani from the Plant Medicine Summit on Gut-Brain Connection. And probably one of the most valuable aspects is the 20% discount from Floracopia online store. David has created Floracopia as really the preeminent online source for some of the best healing herbs, and to get 20% off, you can save more than the investment in the program just by as you stock your home pharmacy and really get to experiment with some of these really sometimes very little known herbs and the powerful effects they can have on the body. So it's a very comprehensive program. We're super excited about it, and I should mention that the there's another dimension to this, which you'll see on the page, which is we recognize that there's a certain amount of tailoring to a personal situation that is really valuable. And David has made a point to offer a upgrade to the regular enrollment, which includes two hour-long one-on-one consultation times, which is $700 value, and it's just an extra $300. So we've kept the investment really accessible. You can do 8 payments of $96 or save about 10% when you pay in full with one payment of $697. And you can also get actually $100 off when you sign up today as well by midnight. So that is your incentive to go over to the page at plantmedicineformodernepidemics.com and give it a read, tune in, and if you recognize just how much benefit this can provide as you get this skill and develop the sophistication so that you can free yourself from so many of the conditions that really plague people, then it's a great investment. And to do so today, you get $100 off. So the course is going to start on January 29th, and both the teaching sessions and group coaching sessions are on Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Even if you can't make the live times, you can still get the full value because of the transcripts or the recordings come out right away and the transcripts shortly thereafter. So there's just a ton of value. You get to add this to your library of transformational content for the years to come. So David, thanks so much. It's been a very rich and enriching hour, a bit more than an hour, actually. You're very generous with your time. So anything else that you want to share with folks who are considering going deeper with you into the Plant Medicine for Modern Epidemics program?
Well, I would just reiterate what you said. There's a tremendous amount of information here. These modules are laid out. I am not going to go through all of these, but they cover all the most important epidemics, upper and lower GI problems, musculoskeletal problems, people who are going through chemo and radiation, mental health issues, all the things that we know about. But I will also just stress one last thing, and that is that in every one of these modules that there's a lot of emphasis, and Stephen, you did touch on this also, there's a lot of emphasis on looking at each condition really holistically. Not just the herb program, but also how to really think through the process of putting together your individualized program. So we talk about things like how to safely experiment with the herbs. You need to actually know how to start using the herbs. You can't just, no matter who you see, you can't just go home and start taking things randomly. You need to do it listening to the body carefully. So we have that as a strong point. And there's also a new component to this, which is working with your doctor, okay? Because a lot of these conditions, people are already on medications. And so there'll be discussion about understanding the relationship between the medications and the herbs, and also how to have conversations with your doctor if you're trying to reduce something or the concerns they may have about you using herbs and all these different things. So, yeah, just check out the list there. I think that you will find that if you have one of these conditions or you have a loved one or you are a caregiver, if you are a clinician, you're probably going to see that it's a very comprehensive approach. It's really much more than just, oh, take this herb for this condition. It's really a holistic way to think about how to incorporate herbal medicine at the next level, thinking like clinicians ourselves. So thank you, Stephen, again.
Thank you, David. Thank you, David, for the wealth of study that has gone into what you've shared today and the generosity of spirit to share so much in the Modern Plant Medicine for Modern Epidemics program. You are a gift for all of us, for our health and well-being and our ultimately our illumination as well in terms of integrating what we understand about ourselves and the plant kingdom and the world. So I strongly encourage you, if you've been intrigued by what you've heard today, to go for it. David is a master teacher and knows more than anyone. So you're in good hands and you're going to get a lot of great value for the long term. So again, you can find all the details at plantmedicineformodernepidemics.com and you get $100 off when you sign up right away. So thank you so much. And thank you, David. Many blessings all.